Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This would be episode 171, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode171. So today we're talking with one of our playwrights, one of Theater Folk's playwrights, Stephen Stack, who also has many other talents and many other hats that he wears. One of them is that he has a background. He actually went to school for this in divergent learning. So mostly for my sake, that let's define that word. To be divergent is, and I keep thinking, I'm going to mention this in the interview, but I keep thinking of the book series and the movie, but that's not what we're talking about. But it is to move or extend in different directions from a common point. Let's say a script or an idea or a character or being a different from the quote unquote, air quotes, typical student, to differ in opinion, to deviate from a plan, practice, or path. And I think both you and I know that there is no more class that is more divergent than the drama classroom. You have a vast number and a variety of different students who end up in your classroom. Some who want to be there, some who really don't. And I know all of you have had students who deviated from the path. Again, I'll use those air quotes. You know, the path. And they're ending up in your classroom too. And you also have the ability to look for many different solutions to a problem in a drama classroom. There is always more than, well, let's not say always. There is a lot of times when there's more than one way to play a character, to interpret a scene, to apply creative thinking. Theater is the perfect place for divergent learning to happen. So that's my two cents. Let's hear what Stephen has to say on the matter. All right, I am talking to Stephen Stack. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Lindsay.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. How about you?
I'm doing peachy. I'm doing absolutely peachy.
Ooh, peachy, very nice.
Why not? I'm trying to mix it up a little, not be like awesome all the time. Sometimes you have to be a fruit.
Exactly. And so now I feel like I should have gone with like a pineapple, but my chance there.
But that was, in a very subtle way, sort of a great example of the thing we're going to talk about today, which is divergent learning. Now, of course, and I also want to say, which I'll also, I'll talk you up greatly in the introduction, as I always do, that...
Sounds good.
Okay, why not? That Stephen is one of our fabulous Theater Folk playwrights. And when we get to the Theater Folk news at the end of this, I'm going to name them all. Bottom of the Lake, Ashland Falls. She wrote, died, then wrote some more. Dread playwright / pirate Sadie.
Ooh, even at the beginning too. Wow.
Oh, I tell you. We'll do it more than once. But the reason that Stephen is here and he's talking to us today is I learned something about Stephen. Now, Stephen, you've been writing for us for quite a number of years.
I have, yes.
And this, for the first time, we were talking about a course that you're going to do for us for the Drama Teacher Academy. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned on the sly, I think, that you have an MED in divergent learning.
I do, yes.
First of all, why? I think I know you went to school.
Did go to school for that, yes.
Did go to school for that. So... first of all, why did you decide to get an MED in divergent learning?
Well, I started my career teaching middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and you can't really get more divergent than that. So as I went through that, I was really drawn to the vastly different students that I dealt with on a daily basis in the same classroom and actually with the same students on a day-by-day basis or a minute-by-minute basis. And that was like, I've always been drawn to like the different students and how they learn and how they interact with the world around them. And also with brain theory too, because that was one part of this course that I was, this program that I was in. We studied a lot about brain theory, and that was really exciting to me.
Okay, so my understanding of what divergent learning is, and I keep thinking of the of that book series of Divergent. Every time I say the name, that book series comes up to me. But
It's a little different than that.
it's way, I hope so. What you mean this learning isn't when you get ripped away from your family and have to go live in a different. Oh, now I'm trying to remember what's all about.
Well, that's only in the advanced classes, though.
Yes, you're only in the advanced classes. Are you ripped from your family never to see them
Absolutely. And that
again?
really takes a lot of work.
It
So,
really
yeah.
does. It really does. Okay. But as my understanding of divergent learning is that is when you get into it, you're really looking for as many possible answers and solutions to whatever it is that you are dealing with. Does that sound
Absolutely.
about
And I
right?
think the key thing is that you, the whole program was to force you to not look at students as a group of students, but as a group of individuals, and adjust your teaching and your expectations and your perspectives to the individual student so you can give them what they need to be better student, to learn subject you're teaching, or to be better at life in some ways.
And that this just compares to convergent learning, where that's really sort of the standardized testing model, isn't it? Where everything sort of leads to one answer and one solution.
Right. And that's always like, I can see why testing is pushed in education, because that's the easy answer. But that presents a black and white solution. Either they can do the test on that day, or they can't, or they can answer the question. But in reality, students, just like anything, it's never black and white. It's always a shade of gray. And that's what divergent learning reinforces, as you're faced with it every single day, looking at those shades of gray, having to see the individuals, realizing that there's so many variables that you deal with every single student, that the course allows you to be equipped to handle that, and to, instead of being scared of, oh no, they're all so different, instead you can look at it and go, okay, I know what to do here, or I have an idea of something that might work, and if that doesn't, I have a bunch more ideas too.
Now we're going to dive into the drama classroom
Right.
because A, there isn't a lot of convergent learning that happens in the drama classroom
Absolutely not.
on a daily basis because there is no one solution for a lot of the things that happen in
Right.
drama class. And that divergent learning is just, it's just prime for the drama class where we can push students towards creative thinking, working together, and just learning that there is more than one answer to any problem.
Absolutely. And theater is the perfect place for that to happen, because when you look at theater at its basic level, it's a reflection of life and all the many nuances of life and all the characters that we encounter and all the feelings and all the hopes and the dreams and all the fears and everything. And then theater becomes that. And the fact that sometimes theater becomes a dumping ground where you get kids from either love theater or don't even know what theater is, and they're all in like in this one class. It's so beautiful because you're looking at the world right there in your classroom.
I will not start singing We Are the World,
You
but
could if you wanted to, though.
okay, I don't want to. How about
I just
that?
want to do the Stevie Wonder part because I've got that down.
Okay, what are some skills that you sort of need to pursue? What are some skills that are really important when it comes to pursuing divergent learning in the classroom? What's one skill that you think teachers should be applying?
The first is very simple, and this is very internal. It's changing your perspective of how you see the divergency of your classroom, as in, it's an opportunity. It's not something to be feared. It's an opportunity to reach these students on so many levels. And that's the big thing. It's a perspective shift, because I hear some teachers talk a lot where they're scared and they're like, well, I don't know what to do. They're all so different. And if you change it to, this is exciting, this is something new. Because right now in my summer camp, I have 8 students right now in this ALP summer camp where we're teaching playwriting and acting and things. And I have a kid who 5 years ago was in a refugee camp. I have a kid right now too who's transgender and is suffering from many mental issues that she's struggling with, and various panic attacks and experience in all kinds of levels. And at first, I was intimidated too. But when you take the time just to talk to them on their level and you're willing to adjust what your expectations are per student, it becomes a beautiful thing. And that's one of the next things, is be willing to adjust. Not have, this is what I want to do and this is what I'm going to do no matter what, but have, this is an idea, this is where I want to go, but understand that these students are going to take you in various directions, and be willing, be flexible enough to go, cool, I'm going to do this. This is where we're going today.
Well, it's really interesting too, because in the drama classroom, relationships are almost as important as your curriculum,
Absolutely.
because it has to be a safe place.
Right.
And I think that if you're going to approach your classroom as a place of divergent learning, then your classroom is automatically going to be safe because you are taking into consideration the relationship, not only your relationship with each student, but the relationship between the students.
Well, and one of the things what I call, when I tell my students when we start, is I want to create a community of one, where they're all individuals, but they're all working towards the same goal. And they respect that they all have way more in common than they actually have, different. And we embrace those differences and we support one another. Because if you don't have that support, like you said, if you don't have that safety, kids aren't going to feel comfortable to take chances. And that falls on the teacher to create that community of one, and to be willing to put themselves out there, to encourage students to put themselves out there and where they feel safe to. Because once they feel safe, once your basic need of safety is taken care of, what you can accomplish, there's no limit to it. You can push yourself further and further. And that's an amazing thing. And also, what a teacher can do if you focus on progress every day, where you point out your students' progress, like something they got better at, that also helps that because they're seeing that growth every day.
Absolutely. So what's something that so if we're talking about this whole notion of this, you start out with this this concept of the community of one, and you're starting on your first day and you're looking at all these students and you're looking at them as individuals. What's an exercise that you do to sort of start out with looking at people as at people, looking at as your students as individuals, something that might get them to start relationships with each other?
Well, the basic thing I do in every class, and what I start with every day, it's one of my favorite things, is just simply called a check-in, where a student is allowed, they don't have to, they can pass if they want to, that they share something that's on their mind. It can be funny, it can be what they had for breakfast, it can be something that's stressing them out, but they share it, and everyone else listens to it. They don't comment on it, they just share it. And then the teacher, I share something as well. And that right there, something as simple as that, starts creating that community where they're sharing a basic fact about themselves. It's safe, but at that point, students are listening to one another. And then some other things I do after that early on is we create these games where they play. Basically, you can look at it as team building, but they're working on a project together where they either succeed or they don't succeed together. There are no stars. They have to work together for success. And like one of the things, a version of that is what we call a play in a day. Or if you're in a public school, it could be a play in a week, where I give them a play, and their job is to completely stage it, cast it, everything by themselves, with me providing guidance when things get a little iffy. But then they see that they're having to give each other feedback and they're having to work together. And if you allow them to struggle, the end result is a beautiful thing.
What a neat, and I don't like neat is not the word I mean. I mean like what a interesting thing to just put out to your students and go, okay, you have, I almost think it should be like 2 days. Like something like, it depends on how long I guess teachers see their students. Or
Absolutely.
maybe a week, but it has to be, and oh, if it's a week, then it has to be memorized. Here's a play.
Right.
You must put this play up. And just to, and as you say, just to let them struggle with it. And how do they work with each other? How do they find different solutions? Like, you know, yes. Okay, we don't have a set. Okay, so what are we going to do? Okay, we don't have costumes. Okay, well, what are you going to do? What are different solutions that you could come up with? And that I really like the idea that succeed or not succeed, you know, and they're all doing it together.
And the cool thing is too, is that the success is not based on the performance at all. Because to be honest, I rather like when the performance suffers, people mess up and things like that. Because then if the process was right, like they did their best, they tried to put it together, they worked hard and everybody was working together. They faced struggles, but they dealt with those struggles. That's where their success is. So after their performance, whether it's great or not, I base it on the process. I don't even talk about the performance at all. And I want the students to reflect that the process is more important than the product, because the process takes care of the product in the end, regardless. And it's product we don't really control necessarily anyway. Too many variables.
And actually, I really like that idea, because they'll know it would be very heightened for them if their process was filled with conflict and people fighting and things going awry and people not communicating and not collaborating. What's going to be on their mind.
And I love that. There's another thing that I do too. It's also team building, but they're games I set up. And the games, once again, you succeed or fail together. And the early games they play are set up to be where they think they can succeed, but they can't.
Ooh, like what?
Well, for instance, it's very simple games. Like one is just keep the balloon up, where I say, all right, you have to keep the balloon up. No balloons can touch the ground. Seems very simple. Then I keep throwing more and more balloons in until it's basically triple what they have. There's no way they can succeed. And then when a balloon hits the ground, I go, well, you lost. Now sit and you plan again. Come up with a better way to do it. So I give them another opportunity to try it. But what I want is them to, and I'm monitoring the whole time, but I'm letting them have that conflict where they get frustrated with one another. And then I talk to them. I was like, well, what is this frustrating getting you right now? This frustration, you're dealing with it. Now, how do you make it better? What do you need to change? What's the steps you need to take as a group to win? And then as the games go on, the last game's always set where they can definitely succeed. But once again, it's not the winning the game. It's winning the process.
Oh, see, so that needs to go on a t-shirt right there. It's not winning the game. It's winning the process. I love that. That's so good. See, I started singing.
I have a feeling by the end, there's going to be a We Are the World. Ready.
It's either that or it's something from Hamilton. Now, you know, that's like we'll be current. okay. So, all right. This is why I like talking to you, Stephen. I always get very excited because it's, I think that, so that is in its, that's the first thing. That's a really great thing in terms of relationships and communicating and collaborating and that process. And process, I think, in a classroom situation always has to trump product. And that's where divergent learning can really come in.
Okay. And they go together beautifully too. The process feeds the product. It's, you know.
Yes. Yes, I do. And okay, so now let's talk about something else that has to happen with divergent learning. And that is not looking for one answer, looking for multiple answers. And students today, unfortunately, are just not wired that way anymore, right? They are being told in all their other classes that there is only one answer. So when you are working with students and you are getting them to try and change that thinking to get them to look for multiple solutions, what do you do?
Well, the first thing you have to do is get them to take ownership of their decisions, of their learning. And because one of the things I always tell them, I was like, when you're answering this, don't give me the answer you think I want. I don't want that. I want you to own it. You do what you think is right. When they're writing a script, write it, not for me. And that's part of it. And then what you want to do, because students need to discover things on their own. I can easily tell them that life is not black and white. Life is a shade of gray. But that does, they're not going to go, oh, thank you. Now I instantly believe that.
Now the world has opened up to me and I know
Right.
everything.
Because, and I stress to them, I can't make you change. I can't make you learn. It's a decision that you make. But one of the things I do too in class is we do a quote of the day where I pick various quotes about life, about empathy, various things about learning. And I just write them on the board. And then in there, they always have an actor's journal where they write various things, scripts and such, but they write their reflection. What does this quote mean to you? And I might have an idea of where I want to take them, but I never, all I want them to do is think. And each day I push them to think a little more. And the hope is that you plant these seeds and you just look at it day by day, week by week, and see the progress as the students start to evolve their thinking, as they start to see that there are other viewpoints rather than just their own and other teachers, and then they start to expand their thought process. And that's one of the things we do with the quote of the day. It's amazing how that works too.
Do you have students, do they share their point of view on the quote, or is this something that is just private between them and you reading it?
Well, they write it down, and then we do have a share time. And I don't force them to share, but what happens if it's not forced? Gradually, giving direct feedback too, that's another thing. But gradually, what happens, those one who would never share, they do, especially quotes that they connect to. And then I share my feelings, but I always stress is like, just because I'm the instructor doesn't mean that I'm telling you this is the way you have to believe. And what happens is they hear what other people's feelings are, and then it expands their worldview at the same time, creating that community of one. So you're creating connections just simply by sharing their feelings about a quote and not worrying about whether their opinion is right or wrong, because opinions can't be right or wrong, which we stress also. It's fascinating because one of my students right now, the student who 5 years ago was in a refugee camp, he struggles with English. And he's committed, like he has 10 brothers and sisters, and none of them have been to college. And his goal is that. And he ended up like thrust into my class. And for the first couple of days, he barely spoke at all. And now with the quotes of the day, because he was allowed that ability to grow and to get more confident and to take chances, he's sharing every day now and connecting it with his life that we know nothing about.
Well, his point of view on everything must be, foreign is not the right word, but just like completely out of everyone's comfort zone.
It's fascinating, and here's a part of adjustment too. He's never been in a theater class, never been on stage, certainly hasn't written a one-act play. So now I taught him, we went over the fundamentals of writing a one-act play, the basic formatting, things like that. And then I told him, we talked about what he wanted to write about. So he created a character that lived at this refugee camp and the day-to-day experiences of that because he connected it to it. Now, normally, I had an idea where this would go in some other direction, but when you consider the individual and you empower him, he is writing some amazing things, exploring the things that he has experienced. And so not only is he connecting to the work, his peers that haven't experienced this are connecting to it too and seeing him in a completely different light than the quiet kid who struggles with English.
Well, and because that's all it's all about the notion of assumption, right? Well, he doesn't talk. Ergo, what on earth could he have to say?
Right, it's that black and white decision. Okay. And instead, teaching, allowing students to see the nuances of life makes them at points, instead of rushing to judgment, it makes them at least take a pause and go, wait, maybe this isn't what I think it is. Maybe I should just step back and learn about a situation, a person. So.
Well, looking for multiple solutions to this, right?
Right, and that's what theater is. There's so many, it's so varied the characters that you're going to play.
Well, and the different, the just the different, the different ways that they can be played.
Well, and we talked about it in class a couple days ago. where one of the quotes was, I actually sent that one to you too, about empathy, that theater can teach empathy because you have to get inside of these characters. And then one of my students said, I get that, and I get how it's possible. But my problem is that I have these people in my theater group that play these characters, and they're the meanest people in the world. Why is that? And then that led to a discussion about how hard it is to take the focus off ourself and actually to see the world through someone else's eyes. And that discussion went for like 30 minutes. We got so behind in other things, but that discussion was the most important.
Oh, well, and it probably, when it comes to the process of them as human beings, then it was exactly the thing that had to happen.
Right, because in the end, it's not just about the class. Because let's say we make them great theater students and they pull off the show or they write the great one act. But what about the part that connects to the human experience? What are they going to take from your class that's going to help them have a chance at a successful life?
So we're talking in very, these are all the best scenarios. This is the best scenario where everybody is, listening to each other and collaborative. So what do you do when it's not the best? Like, because you need to be pretty open in terms of getting students to, if you're going to teach divergent learning, if you want students to engage in divergent learning, how do you deal with the students who are resistant, let's say?
Directly, you talk to them. One of the things, too, in your class, you need to have very direct feedback that when things are working, you point them out specifically. Hey, I noticed that you're doing this. How can we continue this? Or when a student's struggling, you deal with it directly. You pull them aside, you talk to them, and you deal with them on a case-by-case basis. Some students you can just talk to right in front of class. Some students you have to pull aside and ask questions. I saw this and I need to know why this is happening. What's going on with you? And instead of seeing it as a, oh no, this student doesn't want to be in the class, it's real life. And theater is supposed to be real life, and you can use it as a teachable moment. Embrace those challenges, because I've had students that love theater and students that had the most negative attitude about everyone. And there were days where I would talk to this student every single day, but I was always direct. This is what happens. And sometimes the students would, not acknowledge it and would have a negative reaction, but that's okay, because the goal wasn't to fix the problem myself. The goal is just to start the conversation going and to lead for a chance of progress, to let the student know that I'm involved and this situation has to be fixed, and then let the student take ownership of that. And at some point, hopefully, the more you give that direct feedback, they start to take ownership and they start to evolve. I mean, in the end, the goal, when you look at the adult world, you see how the adult world struggles so much just to be nice.
Oh my, we struggle so much.
Right, and that's their role models. So I'm always way more patient with students than I am with adults. I feel like adults should be better, but then they're not. And then with students, if our role models are all like messed up, then we should probably be more patient with the ones who are looking up to us.
Well, being an adult is just, it's just high school all over again.
It really is.
You can't tell. Don't tell them that though. Okay, as we do you and I just
Oh,
want
actually, though, you say that too, but that's one of the things I say when I first talk to them. I
right.
go, I'm going to be honest with you guys. You're all messed up. You're a bunch of hormones and bad decision and arrogance. And then I mention all the good things about them too. And I say, but here's the secret. Adults are just as messed up, but they won't admit to it.
No, in fact, we put on a big shell, an ego shell that says we're
Right.
better than teenagers. And
Oh
it's
my
not
goodness.
true. It's not true.
And when you tell a teenager that, their eyes get big, because an adult is owning up to the messed upness of just the human experience. We're all in this together. We're all messed up. It's all good.
I've said this before. I say it all the time. When I was at like 18, 17, 18, I was pretty sure that I would hit a certain age and then a switch would flick and I would become an adult. I would become a
Right.
grown up. Still waiting. I am still waiting.
Yeah, I don't think that happens anymore. I've given up hope of that.
Okay, as we wrap, so I wanted to do one more thing.
Sure.
Just in terms of this, and that is on the notion of brainstorming. Do you practice brainstorming, like just to really push students to come up with multiple choices for something? How do you get them to really key into that part of their brain where they're not looking for one answer?
Well, one of the things that I do is I talk about my process with writing plays and things like that, and they really eat that up. And I talk about how it's okay just to sit and play in the creative sandbox for as long as you need till ideas, and just to jot down all the ideas. And actually, I tell them, I was like, I usually go, reject your first 253 ideas, because that 254th one is going to be amazing. And what it is that in the brainstorming process, you honestly, and you don't reject it then, but you just get out on all your thoughts and you don't start writing. You embrace the process of playing around with thoughts like you did when you were four. Because with four, you weren't worried about the final performance or the final product. You just played, and encouraging them to just focus on the process of creating, of thinking, of getting these ideas down without even judgment is a beautiful thing. I make that joke about the 253 because they're so product based now that they limit themselves to some great ideas. And when that next idea is just around the corner, if they just stayed in that creative sandbox a little bit longer. And when I model it, that really helps because they see the instructor doing it and they're like, oh, maybe I'll try that too.
Awesome. Lovely image to end on. Thank you so much for taking your time out to talk to us today.
Hey, no problem. This is fun.
Thank you, Stephen. Okay, before we go, let's do some theater folk news. So Stephen has a gaggle of plays in the Theater Folk catalog. Not only does he do comedy well, he also knows how to combine creepy and comedy. And I think that's my favorite part of his writing skill. And as I mentioned in the interview, we've got plays such as The Bottom of the Lake, which combines ghost stories, urban legends, a little noir, teen issues, and s'mores, with an ending that no one saw coming. Also, Ashland Falls, an excellent acting challenge, as each actor has to play two completely different roles in this very ghostly tale. She Wrote, Died, Then Wrote Some More is actually not a ghost story. It's a melodrama. And we have characters who die, supposedly, and then they don't die, and then it features some betrayals, some broken hearts, a odd but beautiful love story, the best kind, I think, and a fainting when frightened disorder. And I swear, it's not a ghost story. It's totally, totally a really great melodrama. And last, we have the dread playwright Sadie. I'm going to say two words: girl pirates. Three words: rocking girl pirates. I love that about this play. Comedic girl pirates. How often do you have girls in your class who don't want to play the standard roles? Make them be pirates, right? We also have a girl who wants to be a playwright but has to be a pirate. Okay, that's more than two or three words, but you get my point. You can find all of these marvelous scripts at theaterfolk.com. By searching for Stephen Stack. You can also read sample pages of all of these plays before you buy on our website. We like to make sure that you like what you get. And if you're looking for creepy or comedy or creepy comedy, there's a good bet that you're going to like what you see. And you can also find a link in the show notes to Stephen's plays at theaterfolk.com/episode171. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.